All right, Dave, we have a very special guest this week. I mean, a very special guest. This is a person who has lived the rock and roll lifestyle like you would not believe. Mm-hmm. All right, maybe not the lifestyle, but he has seen it all. He was the lighting man for just about every major event that happened in the rock and roll world. We cannot wait to talk to him. And so I'm not going to waste any more time with the introduction because I want to get right to the interview. It's time for Minutia Men Celebrity Interview.
This is the Minutia Men Celebrity Interview with Rick and Dave.
So, Dave, it's an incredible honor. We have the godfather or grandfather of rock and roll production.
Godfather.
He's on the show. He's simply the biggest name in lighting. He did the Newport Folk Festival, Monterey Pop Festival, Woodstock. Yeah. Altamont, Concert for Bangladesh. I mean, sheesh, that's just scratching the surface. Please welcome to the show, Chip Monk. How are you, Chip?
I'm well. The second cup of coffee, I'm feeling well.
Now, we're talking, it's in the afternoon.
Looking forward to seeing you.
It's in the afternoon here in Chicago, but we're talking to you in Australia. So we have to thank you for getting up early for us. That's very nice.
With pleasure.
I have so many questions to ask. I don't even know where to start. But how about this Woodstock?
Yeah, that's a pretty good place to start.
You were brought in to do the lighting, which you know did at nighttime. But in the daylight hours, you were also the MC. I mean, if you've seen or heard the Woodstock soundtrack, the brown acid announcement.
Don't try the brown acid.
That was you.
Yeah, yes, it was.
Tell us about that.
Michael Lang at about 6 o'clock in the morning on the first day came up to me and said, oh, by the way, we've overlooked having an MC.
What do you mean they overlooked? We didn't think of having an MC?
Yeah, crap.
Michael does this in his very own way.
Yeah.
The way that suits him. And probably most of the people in the audience. But he said, well, we don't want a slapstick or a prepared act or something like that. We want something just real. So you're it. Now, the audience is very close to the front of the stage. It says, and as you can see, there's an 8-foot wall of plywood that gives us the front of the stage, the vertical front. And if they stay there, all they're going to do is see plywood for 3 days. So I think it's a good idea if you ask them to take lots of steps backwards and get into a position where they can either sit or stand and see everything that's on the stage instead of just admiring plywood.
So talk to this crowd of 400,000 people and ask them to move back is basically what he said, right?
Yeah. Most of these problems are all mechanical. It's the fulcrum in the plank or the crossroads of nuts and bolts and stuff like that. So you just deal with it as though it were a mechanical problem. Hi, folks. My name's Chip, and I will be your MC or your guidance counselor during this set. What I need to ask you to do is so that you can see comfortably when the rest of the crowd comes in and starts to push you down forward, even closer to the stage as you are now, I think you better pick up all your stuff. And I'm going to ask you to take 10 huge steps backwards. Now, don't turn around because then you are making an offensive move. Yeah. If everybody's moving backwards, nobody's looking at each other and arguing about where we're going and why. So pick up your stuff and realize that this comfortable little hollow in the ground that you might have sat in or made it a comfortable area for you to sit in is going to be available because the people behind you did the same thing. So you're just changing holes. Okay, let's try it. And I'm just going to count, and each of you take a major step backwards as we go. And that means all of you, unfortunately. It means you guys way out there in the middle of the audience are going to have to give space to these people.
Chip, did you say Simon Says?
No. So I counted one, two, three. Holy shit, they're doing it. Four.
Jump on 1 foot.
Five. And we got to 10 and said, okay, we've made it 10. That's great. Now we're going to put up our barrier again, which is 2 wood metal stakes and a clothesline between it. And that is the barrier that we are asking you not to cross, only because you won't be able to see anything other than the drummer who's on a platform or somebody who's just downstage. You won't be able to see any of the support musicians and probably not the light show and all the rest of the things that we have planned for you. So thanks so very much for that. Really appreciate it. Now, our first act is Richie Havens.
Yeah. Wow.
That's amazing. And
for me, it kind of set the tone that these people were, they had a lot of fluidity.
Yeah.
They got here.
Right? Right. Good point.
However, walked, driven, you know,
in the middle of nowhere.
Their way there.
Yeah, with a...
but they made it. And now, with no gates, no fences, no ticket price, it was a free concert. And because it is, it would be nice if you'd treat each other with some courtesy and help each other out. If somebody is having a bad time, you know, give them a hand.
You're a huge...
Well, we got to that a little later, but it was, you know, you're a new community, and you're 450, by the time we counted it on a huge photograph with a pin, because the computer wasn't available at that time. We found out we had 458,000 people. Wow. And we couldn't count those that were underneath the trees way up in the back. Wow. So we were over 500,000.
So you were,
which was quite exciting.
You were feet,
and I was scared shit.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
why don't they use you for like the English Premier League? You know, they never tried this before.
You could teach great. You could teach kindergarten. And it would be great. You know, so I've seen this movie a million times, and I mean, some of the greatest moments in rock history. You were what, 10 feet away from? You know, Jimi Hendrix. National anthem, you know, Pete Townsend throwing the guitar. I mean, all these just great moments. You were right there for it.
And unfortunately, underneath the deck or the stage is 650 lighting instruments, each of 1,000 watts apiece. That were all of my toys that we were going to hang on the roof. But by the time the roof was up, we realized that it was not a load-bearing structure.
Oh, no.
There's nothing else you can add to it, because then it becomes really dangerous. Because one of the telephone poles that held up the one side of the stage, out of the two, there was one left and one right, with a big round circle of metal on the top, and all the cables that went across the stage that held up the roof went to the other mushroom on top of the other pole. Well, one of the poles lost 10 feet when it was unloaded. So the thing in order to save time, what somebody decided to do is, well, let's cut 10 feet off the other one. Now that all of a sudden brought the roof, or the structure of the roof, down another 10 feet, which meant all my angles were wrong, and my backlights would be just not shining on the back of the performers and or close quote orchestra, but they would be shining right in the faces of the crowd, which meant they won't be able to see anything. So throughout the rain and everything, the 650,000 watts of lights rusted underneath the stage. Wow. And all I ended up with was 12 Super Troopers, and that is those are follow spots. Those are my paint brushes. And when I point a follow spot at someone, that means it's important. The size of the spot tells you whether they're just a player and have to be illuminated, or if it's tight and the color is lighter than anybody else's color out of the 6 colors that are in the instrument, then you know you start to see how the group is built.
Wow. See, I mean, this is it's sort of thing that you don't think about, at least, you know, a layman like Dave and I, we don't think about that sort of stuff. But
yeah, you flick a switch, everything's fine.
And the other thing was the rain.
Oh, no, but see, the flick a switch would have been wonderful. But in those days, nobody had made a lamp powerful enough to use in that Super Trooper or the next one that we did in 1970 was the Gladiator. They ran on carbon rods. Now, the carbon rod is about the size of a pencil, and it's wrapped with copper. And it's in one jaw, spring jaw holds it one more in the ass end of the instrument, and up front is another jaw that holds another rod. Now, when those two rods move together or motorized by the speed that you ask it to, you have 42 minutes before they're all burnt up. So each lamp has to start at a different time from the other one in that group of 12 carbon arcs.
Oh my gosh.
Therefore you have to make notes of who started first and who started last, because you know that number two, which was, or even number one, which may have started first, has only got 42 minutes. So at about 30 minutes, you're worried about losing number one and who's going to cover for them. And then you tell everybody that we're going to reposition you. And number two, you are now our key lamp from stage left or camera right. And number three, you're doing the same thing, but you're a different position now.
Wow.
And, you know, so that's basically the mechanics of dealing with the equipment that you had available.
You probably got a great grade. You got a great grade in electric shop in high school.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, it really was all, it was mostly osmosis. Oh. When it first went wrong, is the time that you never repeat it revisit it.
Trial and error, right?
It's like, yeah, it really was. And really, the audience didn't know any better because we were just a step ahead of what they'd seen. And we managed to stay that way.
How big was your crew? How big was your crew that you had working on that?
The group of people that were working on the entire staging element was about 20.
Wow.
And 12 of those were also my follow spot operators, which would at a certain time leave and start to learn their instruments. During the daytime when nothing needed to be lit, and all I had to do is to make some announcements that John Morris wasn't making. We took all the black velvet or velour or duvetine, which is this black material that you use for the legs or the borders that usually give you that picture frame of a proscenium stage. And we draped it all around the underside of the stage to make it dark. And we had follow spot lessons during the day when I wasn't needed on stage, except for a possible announcement. And I taught these people that security, we made an announcement. Anybody that's familiar with follow spot operation or has ever used it, regardless of what type, or is interested in learning how this is done, go to security on stage right. That means on the right hand side of the way of how you're facing, and introduce them to me, and have them sit down in these chairs. Watch what we're doing, and when we finish with this 12, we'll pick another 12, and they've got to tell me just how much they know about what you've seen us doing under the deck.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Yeah. That would not have been us. We would not have gone down.
Random guy six, you have to follow Stephen Stills. Random guy eight, I want you to follow Graham Nash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is
so amazing. Speaking of Stephen, isn't that falsetto at the end of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes is just such a knockout. He's such a pleasure to work with. Our first meeting was at Stephen Sills' rented house in Beverly Hills. And to get out of the noise and the hoopla of the gathering of all these people there, I asked Mick if he would come outside, and I open up the plans. Let's go poolside. I'll open up the plans, and I'll explain to you what I'd like to be able to do, or what I will be doing if you hire me. And so I laid them all out, and I'm starting to talk, and his eyes are starting to glaze over a little bit, so I slowed down and became a little more simpler. And then all of a sudden the wind came up, and not every plan had a rock on it. So they all ended up in the pool, and he just turned to me and said, "I just fucking do it," and walked away. So I got explicit.
That's
direction.
What my wife says to me all the time. Just fucking do it.
Yeah. It's the same thing as the dishes. Yeah. Just fucking do it.
You know, Monterey and Woodstock were all the, you know, we always hear about how peace and lovey it was and hippies and all that. Uh-huh. Altamont, though, that was a whole different ballgame. And, you know, with the Rolling Stones, you kind of got into a kerfuffle with a Hell's Angel there, didn't you? Tell us Altamont and just how it was different and just that experience.
Well, it could have been wonderful. There was 300,000 people gathered in a bowl that had been reshaped slightly to allow more people to sit comfortably and see. The upper echelon was Rock Shelley of the Grateful Dead, Emmett Drogan of the Angels, Sam Cutler, company or road manager for the Stones, and numerous other people from the Grateful Dead camp, or who said, "Yeah, we can help. Sure, let's go." So everything started to work very nicely, and then again, anybody who appeared to be a problem or who wanted to get on stage or get closer was simply taught by an angel that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Their entry into the bowl, just to make sure that everybody noticed who they were, was a caravan of motorcycles riding directly down the center line of the audience towards the stage, right through all these people.
Wow.
With no horns, nobody in front of them to clear their way. They just ran over whoever was in the way. So what they did is they just, in their own way, they showed their prominence and that they were an unguided force.
Wow.
Now, this was a bit of a problem because this unguided force got a bit out of hand.
Yeah.
And Meredith died and two other people died. And, you know, their favorite instrument was a wooden pool cue. But the handle part of it had been drilled out and lead had been poured in.
Of course. Yeah.
So it was now a medieval type instrument that was just, it was quite dangerous.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. But didn't you also have a run in with them?
Oh, sure I did. These two guys from the Angels had a pickup truck, and they had a motorcycle or a chopper chained left and right of the space in the truck, and the space in the middle was open. So what they'd done is they'd rolled up the rug, and they'd placed the rug one end on top of the cab, the other end on the open end of the tailgate.
To steal it. They were going to steal the rug.
Yeah. So as they pulled out, I just grabbed the end of the rug, and it slid off wonderfully, except for the fact it brought one of the choppers with it. Oops.
Yeah.
So after we managed to hold it down to maybe 12 or approaching 15 minutes of conversation, explaining that I couldn't afford to pay for it, and it was company property, and that Mr. Jagger liked it and wanted to use it again, and it had yet to be soiled, except for occasional pieces, bits and pieces of people and blood that were on it, which actually
a little entrails, no big deal.
So, no was the answer, and the leaded pool cue came across the my face, luckily below the nose and the eyes, and I lost four teeth.
Wow!
But no dentistry was immediately available, but the importance was to get the rug back. I called John Winter again at Rolling Stone magazine and asked him, at what address did you send a check? And then I said, do you have any idea where Sonny Barger is, who was the chieftain, close quote, of that chapter?
Right.
He was at an important meeting making decisions, and he thought it best to leave Altamont to his secondaries. Yeah. Or he was smart enough to stay out of the picture, period.
Yeah, didn't want to deal with it.
I found Mrs. Hunter's address, then finally found Barger's address. Went to his house. Was a case of booze and some Dom Perignon and some VSOP brandy. Still somewhat uncomfortable on the roof of my mouth, and said, "I got a bargain. Michael would like to have the rug back, and he tells me to give you these." So I unloaded the three crates, and I said, "I hope they're sufficient." And I said, I'm just going to tie this on the roof of my car, if you don't mind. And if you want anything else, here's my phone number. I'll be back on site. I'll be delighted to come by and bring anything you need. Thank you. Goodbye.
So it worked. It worked out. You just lost a few teeth.
You got like 28 of them or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
You got extra teeth.
Yeah, well, you know, it's great. Yeah.
So, you know,
you just chew everything on the side.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, I saw you said somewhere that dealing with Mick Jagger, you never really knew which of his seven different personalities you might encounter.
Exactly.
He was a bit on the mercurial side, wasn't he?
Yes, I think so. But it probably was the defense mechanism or the offense mechanism or the neutral that he'd just come out of before you got him.
Yeah, right.
So if you were invited, you had a little bit of a plus. If you made your own appointment, you better show up on time. But you had about 30 seconds to figure out to whom you were speaking.
Wow.
Is this guy as mad as a half-fried fish, or is he happy as a daisy over there? You know, who is he at the moment? Wow. Who are you speaking to? And he knows that, and we gathered that we could make that there was some humor in that. You could ask, you know, if you had enough backup in for yourself, you could ask, "Hi, who are you today?"
Yeah.
Right? Which is not the best way to start.
No.
With a Paul Anka, you would get punched out or shoved or fired. With a Jagger, he could just, in fact, turn around and say, "Nobody you need to speak to."
Wow. You know?
He's very clever, very articulate.
Oh, yeah.
And nicely enough, a honey underneath it all. Someone who really cares for his crew, loves his position, can always deal with everything that's handed to him. But ultimately, they were all really happy to get the fuck out of there as fast as they possibly could. The helicopter was overloaded. And, we were left there to...
Clean up.
Take Owsley's sound system down and try and find people that are still stuck in the mud or whether they're still alive or not. And it wasn't the most pleasant experience. I finally got to Meredith's mother about 3 or 4 months later. Jan Runner of Rolling Stone magazine was kind enough to send her a check of $500. Wow. That was his get well. Sorry you lost your kid. I just thought somebody should approach her to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for you. I'm terribly sorry for us as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, I got a cup of tea in my face, and it was a short introduction. And I said, "Thank you. It's been a pleasure meeting you." And she was as bipolar as a child.
Wow.
Yeah. So here, you never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah.
But it's worthwhile getting up for, because it's always a bright and shiny day. And if all the lamps are working, you feel as though you're making a real contribution.
So you worked with Jim Morrison in The Doors a couple of times, right? And didn't you have an experience where we had to whisk Jim Morrison off the stage? Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, in Tucson. There's a large gathering upstage left, which is for the audience camera, right, of officers. And
police officers.
They were there. Yes, there was a purpose for that, and when James began to unbuckle his belt and approach what I thought was possibly dropping his pants, I just thought, regardless of what management thought or what the audience thought, it was time to try and stop that, because there were too many people upstage or behind him ready to pounce on him. Yeah. So I just went out there, put my arm around him, and said, "You got to come with me. I'm sorry to interrupt." And I just put my arm around his shoulders and neck and dragged him off the deck with little resistance. Then I introduced him to all the officers that were back there, and he rebuckled his belt. And shook all their hands, and how delighted he was there, and thank you so much for keeping the crowd in place, because sometimes they do get a bit rowdy. And it's a delight to meet you all. I hope I get to see you after the show. Wow. Do hang around. And if you don't have a seat, there is a pit there, an orchestra pit that is unused, and you can access it from underneath the stage. Please go down and sit there, because there are chairs used for the orchestra, which is not present. You know? So everybody can handle everything if it's the right time and right space. Yeah, if it's the right time and right space for you, it's handleable.
So I'm a Beatles fanatic, and I realize you never technically worked with the Beatles, but you did work with George Harrison, the concert for Bangladesh. And I read somewhere that there was an issue with Eric Clapton backstage at that show. Is that a true story?
I don't remember the story, but it probably would be, because I don't think he'd cleaned himself up yet.
Right. Yeah. Like that he wasn't willing to go on stage because
Right. He wanted, I think he wanted a cup of tea, and Lenny Stein, who was a friend of mine who was present, was not only helping Dylan settle, but went out and got tea for him and came back and continued telling Bob that everything was going to be fun, and he enjoyed this performance, and especially this backup with Leon Russell. And Ringo was told, or the Keltner, I think, the next drummer, was told not to twirl his sticks anymore, because Ringo couldn't do it.
Oh, because there were two drummers, Ringo and Keltner, and Ringo felt like he was being upstaged by Keltner, right?
Yes, by one would use to twirl their sticks like a baton when that hand wasn't needed.
Right, gotcha.
And Ringo wasn't doing that.
Ringo, that was a little above his the steps that he were taking.
Right, exactly.
And so everybody had to stop doing stuff like that and make sure that the principals were being treated as such. I had a lovely letter from management, from Beatle management, that yes, come down, there's talk lighting, but lighting was totally unnecessary for them. Stadium lighting was much safer and much simpler. And I was with Miriam McCabe at Tivoli Gardens, and the way their lighting board worked is they used punch paper cards, IBM cards.
Wow.
And numbered, of course, each for a different cue for lighting. And you slip the card into the machine, close the gate, and hit the switch, and you'd get the lights that rip, that rip.
Remember the
post on the card.
Remember punch cards?
Yeah. Why didn't you just use a Mac? So that would have been a lot easier using a Mac.
Chip, okay, this has been a thrill for us to have you on. I mean, it feels like
don't be silly.
Walking, talking history.
Oh my
here.
God, yeah, and yeah, glad that you survived all those
yes.
lead pipes to the face and Mick Jagger and Jim Morrison. So, Rick, when did you ever meet Jim Morrison?
I never did, as it turns out. I never met him or Mick Jagger.
Was Pete Townsend cool?
That's a no.
Yeah,
that's
to
a no.
Degree. Some people are really happy to be only on top.
Oh, you know? I see. Yeah. Gotcha.
Did Keith Moon put a cherry bomb in anything or destroy anything?
No. No.
You didn't throw a TV set out the window or anything while you were with him.
No. No.
Thank you for being on the show.
It's fun.
And you know, if people want to follow you, Chip, what is the best way to do it? I know you have a website, chipmunk.com. Yeah. Is there any other way you get out there where people want to?
Yeah, just use my email, chip@chipmunk.com.
Okay.
And it's M-O-N-C-K is the spelling of Monk.
Right. All right, Chip. Well, thanks. We don't want to take any more of your time, but we really appreciate you coming
don't
on
worry
with
about
us.
It.
Thanks, Chip.
Okay. All right.
Have a good one. Have a nice day. I know the day's just starting
for you. It's 8:07 or 8:38 or whatever.
Yeah. Thanks so very much. It's been a pleasure speaking.
Thanks, Chip.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Good wishes. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And there he is, Chip Monk.
Fascinating stories.
Man.
You know.
The guy has seen it all.
Yeah, I don't know how many people on Earth right now that have lost four teeth from
to a Hell's Angel
at Altamont. I think that could be the only.
That's the first time ever. Yeah. That's it for this week's Minutia Men Celebrity Interview. We have people to thank. We need to thank
Mick Jagger,
Pete Townsend. We want to thank. You know, Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
First time we had a Jim Morrison story, let's be honest. We'll be back again next week with a brand new episode of Minutia Men Celebrity.
That's my line. Oh. Celebrity interview.
All right. Let's try that again. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of
Minutia Men Celebrity Interview.
The preceding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.
Thank you.